Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy connecting the light. My guest today is Jacqueline Lloyd, a metaphysical teacher and author who believes that Mother Earth is teaching us with the natural disasters and that we either pull together or fall apart. She also believes that the Earth has awareness too, and she knows it is time to change. Are you there, Jacqueline?
Yes, I am, Mike. Thank you for having me on.
Right, you sound a little bit faint. I don't know if you're well next to the mouthpiece of your phone, but I can just about hear you.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. Is that better?
Oh, that's better. Yeah, I can hear you clearly now. Well, welcome to the program. You've got a very interesting background. I always like to start with asking my guest where it all started, and from what I read about you, I think you were quite young. Tell us the circumstances that sort of started you off into this line of thinking.
About Mother Earth teaching us?
Well, I was thinking that you had some sort of experience, I believe, when you were quite young that made a big impression upon you. You were affected, apparently, very deeply by the assassinations of the then-Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk.
Yes. Yes, that was the basis of my novel, The Thief of Sacred. And as I was doing the research for it, I started that in 1991. I interviewed a number of individuals who were part of the military community and the intelligence community and in politics, and I started to realize that something was being planned that would be impossible to miss, and it would be a reason to take away a number of the freedoms that we have in the United States. And of course, my book, it was fiction. I did do it in fiction form, and it had an explosion in the World Trade Center, and I took that out after the initial bombing of the World Trade Center, and I switched it. But it was on an editor's desk when 9/11 happened, and it upset them so much that they just pulled the plug on the whole book.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm now working on the sequel, and
yeah.
That's actually even more hair-raising than the first one.
You never thought then of reintroducing that book. I suppose after the event it wouldn't have sounded quite the same.
Well, I did anyway, because there's a lot of information in there that people do need to know.
Oh, right. I mean, how did you come to the conclusion that an event like 9/11 was going to take place? Because if I understand you correctly, you're saying that it was in your book before the event.
That's correct.
What led you to believe that?
It was a combination of intuition built on the interviews and the information that I received from individuals that I met in the course of the research of the novel. And it was more of a connecting the dots process for me, and even as I was writing it, I thought, this sounds really absurd, but oh well, it's fiction, you know, I can do
yeah.
whatever I want because I'm making it up. And
Indeed.
The parallels are really quite startling, and I'm still kind of amazed at how accurate it is. The part that bothers me the most about the book and what I wrote is the understanding that I received about the energies and the beings behind this whole unfolding and this whole evolution leading up to
yeah.
2012.
Right. I mean, did you actually determine who was behind 9/11? I mean, I know there's a lot of conspiracy talk, and I tend to believe that a great amount of that is based on true evidence, but what is your feelings about that?
I believe that bin Laden did have the idea, and he did create the plan, but he did not, and his men were not responsible for the actual attack.
Mm.
I believe that his plans and his intent was taken by this other energy and this other intent, and the attack was carried out, and he was given credit for it because we needed a reason to go back into Iraq.
Yes, I entirely agree with you, and I notice that you're perhaps careful not to name names, although I think generally people believe that there are those in high positions in the government that have a finger in all that happened.
Actually, the real power behind what I'm talking about is never known. It's never in the public. It's never, you won't see them on Forbes. You won't see them in levels of government. They're the ones pulling the strings. So, yes, there are those in government who are working for these other energies, but you will never see those particular individuals in the media or anything like that.
Are you talking of the group of people that are generally referred to as the Illuminati, or are you talking about yet another form of energy?
Well, it's so hard to describe because different people have different understandings when they talk about the Illuminati. I think there are so many stories and there are so many different ways to view this. My own understanding is that they've been around for many, 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 many centuries, and they've been in charge, and they're in no way, shape, or form going to give up power now. And they know, as many of us at the Light know, that 2012 is a huge shift, and so they are doing what they want to do in order to maintain power.
Right, yes, okay. So you're talking about what you might call a negative energy that has been working outside and influencing certain people to fulfill their agenda.
That's correct, yes. And it's
right.
Just the darkness is just the absence of light. So it's nothing to be feared, it's just to be aware.
Indeed, yes, I agree with you on that. Now, you seem to put a lot of confidence in the fact that Mother Earth is teaching us with natural disasters, and that may sound odd to some people, that we need to learn through disaster. Explain how you come to that conclusion.
Well, actually, I came to that conclusion through a very personal experience of my own. About 5 years ago, I live in Southern California, and about 5 years ago, we lived through what is called the Cedar Fire, which turned out to be the biggest fire in California's history. And the experiences that I had throughout that 24-hour time period, our family, we lost 6 of the 7 homes in our family, and we almost died, and the authorities told us we were safe and we should stay put, and it was only because of intuition that we're alive today. It was a huge moment for me, because I always thought the white knight and the horse would be coming, you know, the fire trucks would pull up, the policemen would take us to safety. I always put power outside of myself. And if I had not made that shift during that fire, my baby daughter, my husband, and I would not have made it.
Right. So where you were told to stay put, I'm assuming here, you actually found it safer to move.
Yes. We were at the bottom of a canyon, and we called 911, which is basically the emergency number. And we told them our location, and they said, oh, it's nowhere near you. Don't worry about it. Just stay there, or you'll clog up the roads. And we couldn't see anything because we were at the bottom of a canyon. But all of a sudden, I just knew we had to go. And an hour and a half later, that entire canyon burned up and everything was gone.
I'm tempted to say you were lucky, but of course you weren't, in a sense, because you followed your intuition.
That's right.
Is that something, I was going to say, is that something that always works for you, your intuition?
You know, that's what I talk to people so much about, because over childhood and adolescence, we're sort of conditioned away from the heart and away from the knowingness. And children have this innate understanding of truth and of how things actually are. But little by little, when they express it and they get a negative reaction or they get backlash or they get fear from their parents and their teachers, they shut that down. And in this time of humanity's evolution, this crucial juncture, it is so important to know where to be and when to go. It is the difference between life and death, and it is so important for people to let go of whatever pain that they might have experienced from speaking their truth and let go of whatever belief systems are preventing them from being in touch with their heart, because there's no time to waste. This is it.
Yes. Do you have a spiritual view about this? I mean, are you also staying in touch with God?
Oh, absolutely. Well, God, in my understanding, God is everything. God is the source of all that is, and there is no separation in anything that exists. And the only separation and the only fear and the only pain comes from people when they decide that they are not worthy of God or they are not connected for whatever wound or pain that they carry. And once we shift that, it's just... It, it's it's miraculous. It's how we were meant to live. And we're being presented between the economic crisis and the natural disasters, and I believe the next thing is going to be an emerging plague that is absolutely devastating. Because of all these different opportunities being presented, we are really being tested. How willing are we to let go of belief systems and to let go of putting authority and power outside of ourselves and following whatever the government says to do? You know, how willing are we to trust ourselves and to do what we know we need to do?
Yes. Do you believe that in these few years leading up to 2012 that it is an intentional period of cleansing and that we should be looking for something better to replace what we've had?
Well, the danger in looking for something better is again, distraction from the individual healing. I find this a lot when I travel and I speak to people, and the problem arises when one's focus outside of themselves and try to identify different things that are going to fix the problem, when in fact really the best thing that an individual can do is work on their own healing and work on the issues that prevent them from truly feeling connected, because anything else is just a recreation of the old.
But do you not therefore believe that if you have a vision of the future as you see it, you can in effect project that forward, and that is the way to make it manifest?
Absolutely. Well, intent is the building block of outcome, and if people have a vision and they have an intent to fulfill that vision, and let's say they know they need to move and they need to sell their house in order to do that, if their intent is in alignment with their heart and it is indeed in their highest and best good to move, that everything just falls into place. I'm sure you've had that experience too, Mike. It's amazing. So
yeah.
Again, it's just to really support each other in following our heart, whatever that looks like, instead of getting caught up in the fear and the negativity.
Yeah. Now, you talk of it being the time when people should take responsibility for what is happening. I mean, how far does that extend? I mean, how much can you do in that sense?
Well, of course, that varies from individual to individual. I tend to talk to people is around the idea of a savior, because especially now during times of great uncertainty and doom and gloom on the media and everything else, people tend to fixate on something that's going to fix it. I mean, our election is a perfect example of that. People really believe that Obama is going to save us. And I caution them against that because, again, that's putting power outside of themselves. And now that he's elected, are they going to just go back to what they were doing, or are they still going to be active and try to make a difference in their community? You know, I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yes. He needs support to produce the results that people are looking for. It's really what you're saying, isn't it? You can't sit back now. He's president-elect, but you can't sit back and just wait for him to do it. We've all got a responsibility with him.
Oh, absolutely. And more than that, though, I sort of watched this election unfold with a bit of interest, simply because I had the same feeling that I had before 9/11. In the months leading up to the actual attack, I had that same feeling that strings were being pulled and people were being manipulated. So, again, you know, yeah. I ask, do you think Obama would have been elected if we hadn't had a financial crisis? And a lot of people say no, probably McCain would have won. And then my question is, well, why was there a financial crisis? Could it have been not necessarily created from scratch, but maybe, exaggerated or manipulated or fanned by some energy that wanted Obama in?
Yes, I think that is indeed the case. When you talk about taking responsibility, do you believe that extends beyond your own parameters, if you like? For example, we've had for quite some years now these situations in places like Somalia where thousands and thousands of people each year suffer great starvation. and lack of the basic facilities in life, we are one as a human race. Do you think we should be looking at those areas and helping these poorer people?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's all part of coming back to the knowingness that we are all connected. And it starts at home, it starts in the community, and then it spreads. And when people get together and they say, enough is enough, things are going to change, we will not allow this anymore, whatever this is, then we will see the change that we seek. But people won't stand up together and say that until they have gotten past the fear that keeps them separate and keeps them afraid of each other.
That is probably where a few disasters start making people wake up, and then they perhaps feel a necessity to come together and do something.
Exactly. I saw that I saw that a couple of times in my own town. It is amazing how people pull together when everything seems to go wrong. It's a beautiful example of how humanity can live. And and I think that's where we're headed, honestly. I think it's great.
I do, yes, absolutely. Now, you're quite keen on talking about the Indigo children. What place do these have in our future?
Well, I believe the Indigo children are a gift. I believe that they represent an evolutionary leap forward in mankind's history. They have an understanding and a knowingness and a wisdom about them that really is going to help us with this transition, if we allow it. Of course, I don't know exactly how England deals with children who are not conforming in public schools, but I do know I toured in Germany over the summer, and I do know that they are not as actively drugging the children as we tend to be doing here in the United States. And I speak a lot about that, and I talk to a lot of parents and a lot of children, and mostly what happens is the breakdown in communication between the children and their parents that just escalates and gets worse, and then the school system says there's something wrong with the child, and then the parent takes that as a personal attack. You know, there's something wrong with me, so my child must conform or I look bad. And so the next thing you know, half of the kids, you know, walking around are on some form of mood-altering substance. And there goes the hope for mankind.
Do you think the problem that the Indigo children have is that they are on a high level of understanding and they can see what is wrong around them, but I suppose as a very young person, you don't feel able to change it at that stage?
Right. I think that's absolutely right. You have two children, right?
Hmm.
Do you see that too?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Oh, do you have children?
Yes, I've got two grown-up boys now, yeah.
Oh, okay. Did you notice that they were different growing up?
The two were like chalk and cheese, and one of them was quite studious and very well-behaved, etc. Difficult. You have to make comparisons. I wouldn't know that I would say they were of the Indigo type, but I can't really answer that fully.
Okay. Well, it's true. They do have awarenesses of how things have gotten so twisted and how the authority that we follow, particularly in this country as well, is not what it seems. And they just have this innate understanding of that. And they're frustrated and they're disenchanted. And, you know, a lot of times they just don't want to go with the program because they don't see the point.
Yeah. Now, you've asked me about my two lads. I mean, how would any parent be able to tell if their child was an Indigo child?
Well, again, it's one of those labels that I try not to use, but it does help people understand what I'm talking about. It's such an individual expression of life, really, more than anything. And people, when adults watch the children or they interact with the children, they will often say, oh, this child is wise beyond their years, or they're very sensitive, or they're very creative, or they won't sit still for more than 10 minutes and do homework, but they'll sit in front of the video game for 8 hours, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, it's just a different way of bringing the energy of life and the energy of being human into the third dimension. And it does not fit with the old way of being.
Mm. I think you're right there. So how would people view Indigo children? I mean, because you're saying that they have this gift, yet other people see it as some form of disorder.
Right. Right. Well, it all depends on perspective. And the thing that I try to recommend to parents when I speak with them is to seek out other parents who have children who are facing similar challenges, because then the parents find a support network and they can make choices that are more appropriate for the child instead of more appropriate for the schooling system or for whatever society has to say about the behavior that is going on. Because if the child is not honored and is not encouraged to develop their gifts, then they turn all that energy and all that power inside, and it becomes very destructive. And that's why we see the acting out, and we see a lot of anger, because they're not supported to be expressive.
Yeah. And I guess for that reason, they don't actually know what is going on inside of them, except that they feel very dissatisfied.
Dissatisfied and different, and they blame everybody. So it's a tough line to walk as a parent myself, and as a teacher and a healer, I really try to honor the children and their uniqueness, but at the same time, I don't allow that to become an excuse. Part of being in the third dimension and signing up for this experience is taking responsibility, and blaming parents or educators or siblings is just not going to help anybody.
No, right. So, in your opinion, what has been predicted about these particular children's impact on our future?
Well, again, I think it all depends on the choices that we make as a global society for the next few years. They can have a tremendous amount of impact and positive in assisting us to think outside of the box and creating systems that replace the old in such a way that we're not simply recreating the old. But if people continue to make choices to live in fear and in separation and continue to give away their power to authority, then the children won't have a chance, because they will continue to be suppressed, and we'll just see what happens at that point. You know, I have a lot of confidence in the human race, and I think we're going to do just fine. The thing that concerns me, though, is that a lot of people still want somebody to fix them or somebody to do it for them. And that can come in so many different forms. I speak with fundamentalism, you know, in religion, and there's a savior and there's a promise of salvation. And so what they do is they disconnect from society because they just can't deal with the grief and the negativity and the stress of it, and so they hold on to this idea that they're going to be saved, and so they don't really have to help be part of the solution because they're out of here, right? And sometimes too, in the ones that I speak with who are connected to star people and the extraterrestrial phenomenon, they sometimes have the same view that that they're going to be saved and the star people will come and fix everything. And while, you know, who knows what's going to happen, any time that we put power outside of ourselves, we're just asking for trouble, I think, honestly.
Well, I have an interest in the ETs myself and have seen many communications. And I think their point is that we have to get the Earth ready for 2012. As you said yourself, Mother Earth has a consciousness of its own, and I believe that task is looked upon as being far too big for us to deal with in the amount of time we have. And they say it is time to meet your brothers and sisters from space anyway, so I think they have reasons of their own, and they're not coming specifically, as you mentioned, you know, simply to be our saviour. But having said what you have, what can parents and teachers do to help Indigo children express themselves?
Basically, the best thing that I can suggest is just to listen. Listen with an open heart and an open mind, and you'd be amazed how well that works. I can sit down with the child, and it's not me. It's just the fact that I listen. And within 45 minutes, I can know everything about a child who people say, oh, he doesn't talk, he doesn't connect with anybody, he's completely, you know, disconnected from humanity, and it's the child just wanted to be listened to, and nobody listened without an agenda, and that's really the main thing. But actually, Mike, I'm very curious what your understanding is of the ET phenomenon, how that fits into 2012.
Well, it appears to be the end of a cycle, and at that time, it is apparently decreed that we shall start a new cycle. So it's the end of one and the beginning of a new one, which is going to increase the vibrations upon the Earth, that is the energy levels, to a point where there has to be changes, dimensional changes. So that's it really in a nutshell. And people who have lifted their own vibrations, who are in harmony and resonate with those energies, can actually lift into a higher dimension.
Okay, and then what happens to the lower dimension?
Well, everybody has free will choice, and if they choose not to ascend, then one assumes they want to stay at this present level. And evidently there is another planet somewhere that is similar to the Earth, where they can continue their evolution. And this, of course, is based on the fact that we have infinite life, and we have a whole series of lifetimes. So if they pass on through this period of time, they will simply reincarnate into a similar level somewhere else. So the two needs are catered for, if you like. Would be a dividing of the ways of those that are prepared to ascend and those that are not, and by their choice just want to carry on in this present type of level.
Okay, I understand. Sure. Well, that does go in line with my understanding as well. But as far as the visitation, the point I've heard this from other people, there will be coming a point where it will be very obvious to everyone that we do have brothers and sisters from other dimensions and other planets. Is that before the parting of ways or after? Or how does that fit in?
Well, it should be before, because the what I've named the parting of the ways really has got to be one of the last acts or events before we actually reach this critical date in 2012. So it will be before. In fact, the indications are that it will be during the course of 2009.
Okay. So are these the ones that are assisting the light, or are they the ones that are assisting those who want things to remain as they are here?
Well, they are primarily assisting those of the light, but they have no preferences in the sense that they would be here to help all souls. They view us as one, and they don't discriminate between one soul to another. But there are changes that need to be put in effect, ready for ascension, which is the name given to it. So they will be here for everyone. I mean, there's no choosing on their part. We make the choice ourselves.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Oh, that's fascinating. Oh, that's great. Okay.
Right. Well, let me ask you, what was your opinion of the significance of 2012?
Well, I've heard about it from many different sources and many different, you know, information packets that came to me from different people and different vehicles. And when I was young, I always knew that it was coming, and that we had work to do before that happened. And as I grew older and I started understanding more and gaining insight into the past and the present and the future, the cyclical nature of it, as you mentioned, really did become clear to me, and the fact that we are moving out of an old cycle and into a new cycle. Go ahead.
Right. You've asked the question, do people understand how important this time is in our history? And I think probably only a minority do understand it. What they do see by and large is rather chaotic happenings and perhaps see no way out. So it's really in line with what you said a bit earlier. We've got to start taking responsibility for what is happening, and if we believe we know what is taking place, to help other people to understand as well.
Right, exactly. And that's what you do with your radio show, which is fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, that's terrific. I love it. And it's also to assist without judging. And that, I run into trouble with that sometimes, too, because especially when there are children involved who are completely shut down, I tend to go into judgment. And that's not helping anybody, and it's only incurring karma for myself. So that's a real challenge for me some days. I get depressed, and I get frustrated, and I get very angry because it's so obvious to me that these are beautiful souls who are connected and here to assist, and it's just, appalling what occurs sometimes.
Yeah. I think you summed it up yourself in one of your statements. You said that we face a choice between love and fear.
That's all it boils down to. And that choice happens every day in many, many, many different ways. And time is speeding up, and so is the law of cause and effect. So actually, the karmic wheel is spinning very fast, and it's pretty obvious now when, at least to me, when I make a choice that is not in love and out of judgment, boy, that hammer falls awfully quickly now.
Yeah. And I think also you really put it in two words very adequately. You've called this period the humanity's final assessment.
Yeah, it is truly the final test. And part of the beauty of that is, of course, the opportunity to make an incredible leap in awareness and vibration, as you say, and consciousness, and rejoin where we were before we separated from the one, all that is, the source of everything. And so it really is an opportunity, and the more people can find support in each other, the more that helps, because really the support that we tend to find easily is the support to stay in the fear and the support to stay in the separation and the anxiety and the escapism, and that support is readily available. Everybody, can find 10 people who tell them why they need to be scared and why this is all so horrible and why they need to put their money in their mattress to be able to be an example and to be able to live in that calm and that trust and that faith and that love for brother, sister, souls is really a beautiful thing. And whether or not people actually express it or the feedback is there, it really doesn't matter. The point is, if you're living in your knowingness, you're doing everybody a favor, and it's a wonderful thing, and I honor everybody I find who has taken that plunge, because it's scary. I know it is.
Yes, indeed. I think for someone who, as far as I know, who doesn't claim to be a spiritual teacher, you're obviously very aware and in tune with that side of life. Now, you've spoken about people not seeing the big picture of greater cycles, and you mentioned that you believe humanity has an impact on climate change. You feel that is part of the process by which humanity and the Earth, the plant, animal kingdom are also changing in accordance with this very long cycle, and you say it isn't in most history books. Now, you've obviously done a bit of research yourself on that. How have you reached this point of understanding?
Again, it's a process of seeking out people with information that I needed, and oftentimes they would find me. It's one of those divine mysteries, how if someone is intending to find something or create something from the heart, assistance just comes from everywhere. It's truly amazing, and I've met some incredibly gifted and incredibly wise people in my life, and you won't find them on TV, and you won't find them in magazines, and you won't find them, you know, writing bestsellers. They know what they know, and they know that they know, and it has the ring of truth, and it has integrity, and they don't charge a lot of money, you know, for whatever healing they offer. They're just beautiful, beautiful souls who are here to serve. And some of them have this far-reaching vision that is required in order to really see the full scope of it. Now, the main thing to keep in mind is that, yes, humanity has impacted the global environment, and yes, we have accelerated this climate change, but it has happened before. And any scientist, any geologist, anyone who studies ancient eras would agree with that. And they say, absolutely, we've had polar flips, we've had, you know, massive ice ages, we've had really warm periods, we've had seafloor spreading and different continents coming up and down. It's all happened before.
Yes, yes. I'm interested to know that you are apparently a very passionate proponent of recreating government so that it serves its citizens. And you're apparently very interested in politics anyway. So I guess we could say, and you'll tell me, that you were quite pleased that of all the candidates that started out on this presidential race, that Obama was the one who was successful.
You know, actually, I wouldn't say that, Mike. I'm sorry.
Right.
I've got to tell the truth. I will not lie.
Yeah.
Honestly, I felt that the entire election was orchestrated, and it didn't matter who won, honestly. I feel like the events that are going to occur, the plans have already been set and wheels have already been set in motion, and whoever actually sits in the Oval Office is irrelevant, because we have passed the point of no return as humanity and on the planet. Now it's just down to individual choice. We still have some time for individuals to make their choice and to shift.
Yeah.
Globally, we're done. We've sealed our fate, and that happened actually before Obama even came on the scene. So you know, I have all the respect in the world for him, and I wish him well, but I don't think he is going to be able to do what he thinks he's going to do, simply because of what has already occurred and the plans and the preparation that's already been made to counteract anything that he would be able to do to truly change things for the better.
Well, we will obviously see. I have higher hopes, but since we've discussed ETs, if in the, say, the earlier part of 2009, the open contact commences, we may find that the type of vision that Obama has expressed will be assisted by their presence, and then perhaps he will be able to go ahead with what he believes is right for the people. Anyway, we will see on that. It's interesting to hear your point of view. Now, can I move on to your sequel to your first book? It's called The Thief, isn't it?
The Thief of Sacred was the first book. The sequel,
yeah.
I'm doing the research and the writing of it right now, and it has to do with the upcoming pandemic and the earth changes and cashless society, refugee camps, all these things that I have become aware of in the course of researching for the sequel, as I did for the first one.
When you say refugee camps, are you talking of the various settlements, if I can call them that, that have been put up in the last few years that look like concentration camps?
That's very possible. I don't know exactly. But are you speaking in England or in the United States?
Oh, no, in the States. Yeah.
Oh, in the States. You know, I don't know what they're up to exactly with different... I know FEMA has been very active lately. I know what the plan is, and I know how decimated people can be by the loss of everything, because I've seen it firsthand. And I know how people who've lost everything get to the point where they've really given up, and that leads them to make one of two choices. Either they come out of it totally transformed and empowered, and things that used to matter don't matter anymore, and they see the value of each and every day, or they crumble and they feel victimized and they're angry that, you know, so-and-so didn't lose everything, or that the government hasn't helped them enough, and they go into a very dark place with it. And so if you look at how these natural disasters are going to start increasing as Earth balances into the higher vibration, you're going to see a lot of that. You're going to see people who've lost everything, who have suffered an incredible amount of grief, and they're going to be forced with this option to choose. Now, there are going to be a number of people who just can't deal. And frankly, I have no judgment on that. It is incredibly painful to go through something like that. And, whatever people choose is, I honor their path. But the refugee camps are designed to reorganize society and re-educate society and restructure society after the natural disasters and the pandemic come through and change life as we know it.
Yeah, but I don't know which view you're taking here, although I suspect it's a positive one. They have been considered to be in the form of, if you like, detention camps to take people out of society that may be viewed as troublemakers.
Well, there are those as well, absolutely. And I actually came across a gentleman who was very well-versed in the cutting edge of mind technology. And actually, he's not into conspiracies or any of that. He works for law enforcement and the giant arm of law enforcement. And he said that they're developing a way to read the electromagnetic fluctuations from the brain that allow them to tell whether somebody is lying or telling the truth. So it's the next generation of a lie detector, for example. And so it didn't take much of an imagination on my part to think, well, if they can do that, if they can read that type of an anxiety in a brain structure, and if they're sorting people after a pandemic, or they're trying to find out who's going to be a problem, if you have one of these scans or anything like that, they'll know.
Yes, indeed. And if you look at maybe the other side of the coin, they can also use their abilities for mind control as well.
There's a lot about that, and I don't know what to believe on that front, honestly, Mike. I'm very selective about what I talk about, because I have to absolutely know that I'm not just repeating somebody's fantasy. And so I check and double check and triple check my resources and my references. And, with the Internet, that actually doesn't take very long at all. When I first started doing this in 91, it took a lot of trips to the library and Civic Hall and that sort of thing. Now I can do it in 10 minutes on Google. But it's definitely happening, and there's no question about it. And it's exciting, because this is what we've been waiting for, really.
Yes, I totally along with you there. I'll just hark back to the Indigo Children for a moment, because I guess this is your own estimation of where the Indigo Children stand, but I believe you've described the energy pattern of human behavior that exists in over 95% of the children born in the last 10 years are of the Indigo vibration. Is that correct?
That's to my best understanding, yes. I haven't gone door to door across the world and taken a poll, but everywhere that I've been, and I do travel around the world, I'm always looking, I'm fascinated with the subject, so I'm always meeting people and talking to them and talking to children all over. And I think it's definitely a force to be reckoned with, because these kids are amazing, and the ones that are in the quote-unquote less developed countries are actually a lot freer and a lot more vibrant and a lot more free to express themselves than children, say, in the United States, especially in upper middle class families. It's not a welcome thing to have a child who was so completely out of the box that they're considered a troublemaker or, you know, not a good member of society.
Yes. Well, that's a very interesting observation you've made there, because I have no way in which to really make a judgment about that, but I'm extremely pleased to find that you seem to feel that it's quite a high percentage. I mean, that's very encouraging.
It is, and God has a plan, you know? I mean, it's not accidental, and it's not accidental that there were forerunners in the 60s to these children who have established centers of learning and different methods of teaching that these children really respond to versus the regular schooling method. And those parents who are not afraid to embrace their child's individuality have resources, and they can seek out these different avenues and watch their child just blossom. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I think this influx of indigo children, and there were others prior to them who came in under a slightly different name, seems to indicate that there is, in fact, a plan for humanity, and that gives us, I think, more reason to believe in the ancient prophecies regarding 2012.
Oh, absolutely. And if you consider that they're remarkably similar, given that, you know, some of them are on the South America, you know, the Mayan and the Aztec, I believe, too, they had a reference to it, and then the ancient Tibetans, which is on the other side of the world. There's no doubt. To me, it's just obvious, and they sent warnings forward in time so that we would have them when we needed them. And it really has to do with not so much the year, but the position of the Earth in the galaxy, the position of the solar system in the galaxy, and indeed also the position of the galaxy within the universe. Because as science discovers more about the dark matter and black holes, they're going to start understanding the fundamental nature of life as well. And it's not just a random substance that's out there, and it all has an impact because everything is related, and most quantum physicists, you know, are aware of that. Everything is related, and so as we travel physically through space in this way, and as the cycle comes to a close, it's just a natural thing for the vibration to change, like you said earlier.
Yes. It is, in fact, believed that this lifting up is taking place within not just our own solar system, but our whole universe, which is quite an amazing thing to try and comprehend.
Wow, you know, and I had a very ancient master. I would call him a master teacher. He said to me that at that point there will be a light that all will be able to see with their physical eyes. So I've been thinking about that a lot, because he wouldn't explain that. He just told me that would be how I would know if I was still here at the time, how people would recognize that part of it, the fact that it is in the universe. It's not just a very small thing, or it's not just about climate change.
That's right, yes. Now, we've been having such an interesting talk here. We're heading for about the last 5 minutes of the program, because I have to finish 5 minutes to the hour. And I want to give you an opportunity to tell our listeners about your website, and you can give them the address while you're doing it.
Oh, thank you, Mike. The website is jacquelineloyd.com, JacquelineLoyd.com. And there's an email me button there if anybody wants to get a hold of me. I love hearing from people, and that's actually the thrill of my life, is when I get to talk to people that that have information to share with me, or have some insight that I haven't thought of. I just love that. And thank you, Mike, for the opportunity to share, and also to teach me a little bit about the ET factor, because it's definitely a factor. I just didn't really know how it was going to work.
Yeah, I thought you were going to end up interviewing me.
I'm always learning. I am always learning, and I love it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Now, if people want to, as it were, talk with you, I believe they can do that either through Michelle, Or you have your own email address, of course. Aren't you prepared to give that out?
Oh, yes, and it is on the website as well. There's a button there.
Oh, it is.
You can just click
right,
on the button.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very available. Like I said, it is really a thrill for me to be able to connect with people that I wouldn't normally, and especially when it's a global connection. I think that I just love that. That's the greatest.
Yeah.
So thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, you're very welcome. How do you use all your expertise? Do you travel around giving talks or do workshops or things like that?
I do. I travel around and things just come together, and I'll be in a certain place. You know, like in Germany, for example, over the summer, I was there with my family. I took my family and we went for 3 weeks, and I did some work and we did some play, and it was a great thing, and I got to meet some fantastic people who are really trying to help the children in particular.
Yeah.
And you know, I just give my support wherever it's needed and wherever people want it.
Yeah, I think you're a wonderful person with your interest in people in need, but I'll tell our listeners that it also extends to animals, because I believe you have an animal sanctuary.
I do. The challenge is finding someone to take care of all the kids while we're gone. That's usually it. But I always find somebody. The perfect person always comes in at the last moment. So it's a wonderful thing. Yeah, it's all good. So.
Yes, I think when you're in harmony with life, that is often how it works out, isn't it?
It is, and that goes back to the choices, the choice of living connected and trusted and
yes.
believing that you are safe, and or believing that, you know, the world is about to go someplace really dark and negative, and we're all separate and we're all living in fear. So it's just a choice.
I think you're very aware of where we are and what people need to do. Would you like to give our listeners a closing message?
I would just encourage everybody to not view this time right now as a time to be distracted. Things may seem that it's sort of calm on the global stage, but it's actually not, and it's actually getting ready to get a lot more interesting. So I would suggest everybody use this time now to examine the last bits of whatever core belief is keeping them separate and keeping them from their knowingness, because it will come in handy in the not so distant time frame. And if the best way that I can suggest someone do that is to follow the triggers, follow the emotional triggers, and you will find where you feel separate. You will find the core belief that keeps you separate, because knowingness has no triggers, and knowingness is only joy.
Yeah.
So this is the time, and let's not delay any longer.
That's great. Thank you very much for that. Thank you for coming on to the program. I will just tell our listeners who I've got coming on next Friday. It is Jock Brockers, who is no stranger to Connecting the Light. This will be his third time. He's a gentleman who has a well-developed sixth sense. And what he does is he teaches other people how to develop it for reasons of their own safety, sensing dangers around them and so forth. So I'm hoping he will tell us a bit about his involvement in exploring haunting and exorcism. Sounds quite interesting. So thank you for being with me today. I do hope you can be with me next week. God bless you all.